Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very senior and accomplished professional from the US, Mr. Rishad Tobaccowala. Rishad, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ashutosh.
Thank you. Rishad is the former Chief Strategy and Growth Officer of the Publicis Group. He's an author, and all of you who are listening to me know I'm very partial to authors. He's the author of a book titled Restoring the Soul of Business, Staying Human in the Age of Data. He's the chairman of the Tobaccowala Foundation, and he's been recognized several times by prestigious magazines like Business Week and Time, etc. So Rishad, we're going to spend a little bit of time on brands, and then we'll focus on your book. So tell me, with so much of experience building iconic FMCG brands, my first question to you is, what goes into building a successful brand?
So there are three ingredients that go into building a successful brand. One has to basically do with the product or service itself. And in addition to providing utility, which is what the product or service is supposed to do, you have to put in there things like design, and other sort of tangible benefits that people can either see or feel or interact with. So that's one, is the product or service portion of it. The second part of it is basically the storytelling. And that is, those will have elements of provenance, which is trying to sort of build a backstory as to where this came from and why it came from, a story about how it fits into people's lives, and those kinds of things. So that happens to be the second aspect, which is sort of the story aspect of it. And design sort of spans the story aspect and the product aspect. There's a little bit of that in both sides of it. And the third component really, which is extremely important, which people may not pay enough attention to, is the people around the brand, which is how do people, which includes the employees of the company that's making the product, as well as the customers and the society around the product, what do they feel and how do you influence them? And that might be sort of marketing. Mm-hmm. And it's more than storytelling, because it's basically, you know, if your employees are happy, it's very likely that they will innovate. It's very likely that if you're a service product, they will provide service. And so in some factors which we forget, we may think about the product, we may think about the story, but we may not think it about the employees. And I'm increasingly beginning to believe that employee joy is what eventually creates great brand experiences.
Amazing, amazing. So my next question to you is, you know, over the so many 40 years that I have worked with brands, one thing I've begun to realize is brands are actually living beings. And you've got to keep giving inputs. But I'd love to ask you, how do brands stay relevant for such a long time? I mean, the big companies keep their brands going for hundreds of years, and yet brands die all the time. What are these big companies doing well?
So the successful companies do a few things that are particularly well. Mm-hmm. The first is they have a higher order for what the brand stands for than just the product benefit. So in the old days when I worked at Leo Burnett, their basic belief was the higher order for anything that was scanned, that was in a can, was could it be tasting and feeling as fresh as possible, mm-hmm. Even though it was in a can. And so for a company called, you know, they invented for like asparagus and other things, a character called Green Giant. He came from a valley, you know, where they grew these things.
Right.
Or they had a Pillsbury Doughboy that you pressed because it felt fresh. So they decided that freshness was very, very important. Mm-hmm. And then they could build entire things around freshness. So they could then move away from cans. They could move away from other things. It was still Pillsbury. It was still Green Giant, but now it was broader because they stood for freshness. So the good brands always stand for a higher order than just like a product benefit. That's number one. The second is they understand that what is considered to be utility and what is considered to be storytelling, both of those change over time, which is the utility of a product change. And like Procter & Gamble, you know, the utility for toothpaste used to be freshness. Mm-hmm. And they had a white tea. And that was, they had a toothpaste that was the number one toothpaste then called Gleam. Mm-hmm. And then the utility basically became cavity prevention. And they launched in a brand called Crest, and Gleam fell and Crest rose. Mm-hmm. But then they made Crest a bigger thing, which is basically about teeth cleaning or teeth care or oral care. Mm-hmm. And now when you think about it, they have everything from whiteners to breath analyzers, et cetera. So you go to a higher level. So one is to keep the product changing as the science changes, mm-hmm. but also to keep your story changing as the way to communicate changes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in today's world, if you had to describe today's world to someone like myself who joined like 20, 30 years ago, and you say, hey, a majority of interactions in media take place on things like Facebook and YouTube and TikTok, and people do it over mobile phones and computers. And I'd say, like, what's a mobile phone? Mm-hmm. What's a computer? Even before I talked about what's a TikTok and what's a YouTube.
Right.
So successful people also communicate. So those are the two big things, which is, as the science changes, these companies always realized because they had a higher order, they could go that way. And at the same stage, they changed their interaction mix, media mix over time. And that's what you'll find with these companies, you know, whether it's the P&Gs, the Unilevers, the ITCs, etc.
Fascinating. So one more question on brand before I move to your book. You know, you did speak about the mobile phone and TikTok, etc. The entire paradigm of advertising has now changed to the small platform. You know, when I was much, much younger, it was the newspaper, billboards, cinemas, film, etc. Today, it's an elevator pitch or even shorter and on a very, very small format. How are brands adjusting to this?
So they're adjusting to it by recognizing that what they're really playing with now is the picture in your mind versus the picture in your eyes.
Okay.
Okay. And by allowing you to interact with them, mm-hmm. and them offering you personalized solutions, they actually can influence and move you more,
okay.
than basically a general message that was about them on a big screen.
Okay.
Now, what they also recognize, and that's one of the reasons why, at least in the United States and other countries, there's a renaissance in outdoor advertising, is big screens also have a big impact. So it's very expensive to buy a big screen in Times Square or Piccadilly Square or things like that. But I always basically remind people that in the end, the real theater is not in front of your eyes, it's behind your eyes.
Mm. Well said. Very well said. So, Rishad, now let's move to your book, Restoring the Soul of Business, Staying Human in the Age of Data. Tell me about this book and when you wrote it.
So I wrote the book in 2018, 2019. Mm-hmm. The book basically was published in January 2020. Mm-hmm. So I spent about a year writing the book and about 4 or 5 months getting it edited because it was professionally published by HarperCollins around the world. And the reason I wrote the book and why it has resonated and remained relevant, you know, 16, 17 months later, is there were three reasons for it. I wrote the book was I was beginning to understand that we were tilting towards that the successful companies in the world combined what I call the spreadsheet and the story. Mm-hmm. They had math and data, but they also had storytelling and design and imagery, exactly as we've talked. But because data was being talked about, because data is not see like people, And data is a global language. And because the internet and successful companies like Google and others were data driven, then marketers were tilting so much towards data that they were forgetting the story. And I try to remind people that data is like electricity. You can't operate without it. But tell me, once you pass a steam age, how many companies say we are better because of the way we use electricity?
Correct.
And so it was, how do you combine the spreadsheet and the story? But I didn't apply it just to marketing. I applied it to sort of life. And I tried to explain to people that in different things, everything from running meetings to how to manage time, you combine these two things. But basically, the underlying premise is we're living in a silicon, digital, data-driven age, but we are carbon analog feeling people.
Well said. Well said. So, you know, you did talk about data, and the whole world is talking of data and data being the new oil, et cetera, et cetera. How important is data in decision-making today? I mean, you know, when I was growing up again, there was a big factor called gut. What does your gut feel about? How will you market this? Or what's going to happen? Now it's all seems to be like mechanized. What are your thoughts on this?
So my belief is it's actually now the best decisions are data informed, gut based storytelling.
Okay.
So my belief is you must look at all the data that you can possibly get, but don't spend all your time just looking for data. Otherwise you'll never make decisions. But if there's data, you should look at it. But I remind people that eventually there are two, and then you do that, and then you combine that with experience and instinct, and then you make something. So just instinct and gut in the face of data that says exactly the opposite is incorrect. But you add something to it. And there are two reasons why it's necessary to add. The first is, if it was only a data-driven decision, then we should just shoot ourselves because the machine can do it better. So I tell marketers, if it's all about data, you don't have a job. There's no reason for you to exist. A machine can do it. That's number one. But I said, that's not true, because if you look at the last 10 decisions you made, 7 of 10 were primarily driven by some data and some gut or instinct or feeling, including, by the way, the idea of having children. Even if it's a data-driven decision, the ROI on kids is not necessarily good.
Okay.
Right? So I said, the fact that you drive a car that isn't a Maruti or a Honda, and you drive a more expensive car is not a data-driven decision.
True.
The fact that you have an expensive watch is not a data-driven decision. So you're living your life not making data-driven decisions and claiming that it's all about data. That's one thing that's important. But the other one that's very, very important in the world that we're sort of living in, and something that I, you know, try to remind people, is what eventually happens is if you think about how you ended up making your most important decisions, they actually were data informed, but really instinctual based on years and years of experience. And it was actually data driven because it was years and years of experience that has formed you. So it's not like I just have a feeling. But that's what makes this thing particularly special. And then eventually I say, look, if it's all about data, why is it that countries like the United States and Brazil reacted so differently to the same data on COVID than New Zealand and Korea?
Correct.
Okay. So I said, you give me the same set of data and I'll give it to two groups of people and they'll come up with different results.
Right.
So how could it be all about the data?
Correct. And yet now when I speak to corporate leaders, everyone's talking technology, everyone's talking artificial intelligence, machine learning, robotics. And I often ask them, how is that changing the soul of their business?
It's changing it in terrible ways, okay? And that's the reason I wrote the book. So the first is, again, as you may know, I have an advanced degree in mathematics. I have an MBA in finance. I'm all about data, and I've driven some of the biggest data investments that my old company made, or the company I work with. So I believe in data like anybody else does. But the reason I don't talk about it is because I understand it. Many C-level executives are using what I call buzzword bingo. They're scared of trying to understand it, so they use these words. But you scratch the surface and they don't really know what they're talking about. Okay? And so my whole stuff is, of course it's essential. Of course you can't operate without it. But it's not, in most cases, differentiating, right? It's a weapon you need. But eventually, it's not the arrow, but the archer, okay? And I remind people that there are two things for successful companies: embrace technology and upgrade your talent. It's the upgrading the talent will be the differentiator in a company, not embracing the technology, because very few companies are like Google or Amazon or Geo or whatever. Most companies have technology as a key ingredient, but they're not they're technology companies in the fact that they use software and technology, but they're not technology companies. And so once people realize that, and that's why I speak, like I've done talks at boards, I do this almost like once a week. And because I've actually run companies, and I explained to them, I said, okay, let's look at a simple company called Microsoft. Microsoft, run by Steven Ballmer, for 10 years, their stock price went nowhere. Run by Satya Nadella, over 5 years, their stock price went up fourfold.
Correct.
The difference was how he dealt with the culture of the company, not how he dealt with the technology of the company.
Very well said. So, you know, now moving on to some parts of your books, you know, I was just picking up a few quotes, and I'd love to understand some examples. For example, spotting the warning signs of data-blinded companies, cold cultures with little human interaction. I'd love to, if you can help me understand with an example.
So I'll give you three examples. An example is in the United States, a bank called Wells Fargo, or an airline called United Airlines.
Correct.
Or, you know, I'll give you those two. So in both of those, what you saw were indications that people were just looking at things like load and costs and finance. And what happened is Wells Fargo ended up opening fake accounts because they said the number of accounts is how you get compensated regardless of anything else. So they started opening up fake accounts. They started giving accounts to people who didn't need accounts. They are now on their fifth CEO or their fourth CEO in 6 years.
Wow.
That's how bad it affected them. When you think about something like, you know, United Airlines, and I compare United Airlines to Southwest Airlines, and both of those fly primarily 737s in the United States. They fly primarily to the same airports. They're under the same rules of the Federal Aviation Authority. How come one airline has gone in and out of bankruptcy twice or thrice, and the other one, which is Southwest, till last year because of COVID, never lost money?
Absolutely.
How come one airline has a 2% turnover rate and the other has 30% turnover rate? Because one is all about loads and planes and maximizing profit. And companies that maximize profit eventually maximize bankruptcy. Right? And so the moment you only talk about math and you forget about emotion and customers and storytelling, you know that's a warning sign. And the other warning sign, there's a chapter in my book called The Turd on the Table, is when people cannot speak truth to power. When people cannot say, hey, that thing that's brown and moist on the table is not a brownie, it's a piece of shit. We better address it.
Well said.
Right? When you have atmospheres where people can't speak up, those are the other things to watch out. So if you are scared about your boss or scared about speaking in your company, you are in that type of company.
Incredible. So the next one that I picked up was poor customer service due to automated robotic processes that cause frustration and hurt the brand.
Yes. So there are two ways of looking at anything. If someone calls you at a call center, you could basically decide that the ideal way you both pay the call center is how little time they spend on the call, because you are basically spending, right? So what many call centers do is they A, make it very hard for you to get to a person, send you through a tree.
True.
When you get to a person all of these people are given like 3 minutes to sort out your answer. And if they can't do it in 3 minutes, after 2.5 minutes, they drop you.
Yes.
They pretend it was that they dropped you, right? And so what happens is you started off by basically saying, I'm trying to save costs in my call center. But on the other hand, the customer gets so pissed off that they stop using your product. What you saved here, a few dollars or a few rupees, are worth hundreds of dollars or hundreds of rupees on the other side. Mm. What's that all about? Mm. Right? And so my whole stuff is, what are you trying to optimize? As I tell people, and this is sort of an example, is I can give you a, you know, I can, if you want to have a cheap hot dog, you can buy a poisoned pig. It'll kill you, but you'll get a cheap hot dog,
mm-hmm.
right? And so my whole stuff is you can basically buy the cheapest ingredients. It'll kill you in the end, mm-hmm. but you're buying the cheapest ingredients. That's what you're optimizing for. And that means you really aren't a marketer, you're a business person, because in effect, you are basically optimizing numerics.
Mm.
A machine can do that. Please move on and try to do something else with your career.
Fascinating. And one more question. I have time for two more questions. But, you know, this comes from what you said right in the beginning about happy employees are much more creative. But from your book, again, poor innovation stemming from stifled employees, not encouraged to contribute ideas or insights. And you also spoken about the turd on the table, but give me an example of this one.
So what I will basically say is the examples are, if you look, for instance, at a company like Costco, which is it's a large retailer in the United States. And you know, their basic belief is to give you as much product for the cheapest price possible.
Right.
But the way they run it relative to, say, Walmart used to run it, is Walmart was centrally controlled. Mm-hmm. Costco basically gave power to everybody in the actual store. So they would brainstorm how to run the store, what inventory to offer, what sales to have, and they were given parameters. You need to make this kind of overall profit margin, and you need to make sure that you have these things that you can't stop. The rest of it, you're open. And so they basically had the employees, by knowing what was going on in their particular community, what worked and what didn't work.
Mm.
So they had better sales, happier customers, and every store felt different, even though it was part of a chain.
Amazing. Mm. Fascinating. And Rishad, my last question to you, and this question is about millennials and the Gen Zs, who are really changing the corporate world because of the way they think. How are they changing, in your opinion, the soul of business?
They are changing the soul of business for the better. So if you look at, and this is true among all people, but it's particularly true among millennials, what they look for in a company are six things. We used to look for three, they look for three more.
Mm-hmm.
We used to look for money, fame, and power,
mm.
right? They look for money, fame, and power. In their case, money is money, fame might be recognition, and power might be autonomy, mm-hmm. because they're younger.
Yeah.
But what they're also looking for are purpose and connections and growth.
Wow.
So they're looking for companies that have purpose that they can align with.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking to feel connected with their bosses, their employees, mm-hmm. their colleagues, mm-hmm. and they're looking for continuous growth.
Yeah.
And they understand that the world is changing and that they're going to spend 40 to 50 years in business. They need to grow.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to spend a majority of their life, it should be something that they should have a purpose for, and they need to feel connected to people. And as a result of that, they are driving a lot of the change.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when people basically say millennials are lazy or millennials are impatient, my stuff is they're actually very hardworking.
Correct.
And they're questioning. They're neither of the others.
Absolutely. Very well said. Rishad, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for talking about brands, but more importantly, thank you for taking me through your incredible book. And is it available on Amazon?
Yes. Yeah, so there are three things quickly. It's available on Amazon, and I know a lot of the audience is in India. And when I launched the book, I insisted that HarperCollins launched the book in India at the same time as they did in the
Mm-hmm.
the United States.
Yeah.
So it's available. It was available in India at the very same time as the United States. So it's on Amazon. But also there's something else, and this is for the next generation and for young people, etc. I write every week on a Substack, which is a free thought letter. It's at Rishad. That's R-I-S-H-A-D. Dot substack.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's read and it's completely free. You know, you can sign up and it's free every Sunday. It's now read by about 30 to 40,000 people a week.
Wow.
Around the world. And it basically, I spend 3-4 hours every week writing it. It takes you about 5 to 6 minutes to read.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, I wrote about how to write a presentation in 9 slides or less.
Amazing.
And I talked about the total future of marketing in 1,500 words in one chart.
Wow.
So those are some of the things people may want to look at Rishad.substack.
I hope the viewers and listeners will listen, but I'm certainly going to be subscribing to it very, very quickly. But thank you again and good luck.
Please, and then please let people know because you'll find it useful. But thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You videocast and podcast. Platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.